Also, I noticed online they're 9 PM registered, but they're home to vote secure. So if you're not registered, you might want to register. Unless you can't register for some reason.
Yeah.
In which case, don't register. Or talk to me. Okay, so can I have a copy of the... And it is apparently meeting here, not in 401 in Delford. It was meeting in 401 until yesterday, and then it got moved at the very last minute. So there's a web page, which is this wiki page. You can also just go to wstein.org, and you can quickly find the web page for this course from there. But you can also see it here. The way evaluation will work is that 60% of the homework will be based on, 60% of the grade will be based on homework. The homework will be assigned each Wednesday and then due the following Wednesday. And you can see that the first homework assignment is here. Actually not here. Does somebody have an extra copy of the homework? Are there no more left? I just need it for a second. Oh, here's one. Actually, I have one. So there are two problems on the first homework assignment. The first one is to read as much of certain papers as interest you and make some comments about them. One of them is only one page long. The second one's a bit longer. The first two are by me and are mainly about Sage. And the third paper is about magma and is about 13 years old. Here's the syllabus. So that's the first one. There are links that for each of the papers. And then the second one is to write a program that computes the sum of the integers up to 2010, not by using the formula nn plus 1 over 2, like Gauss would have done, but by making a for loop and, you know, adding to a counter. But you're going to do this in a whole bunch of different systems. Sage, i.e. Python, C, Cython, Gap, Singular, Perry, Macaulay 2, Maxima, Magma, Mathematica, and Maple. And you'll see how it's different in different languages and see the difficulty of getting access to the different systems and what it feels like to use them and so on. Okay, so that's the second problem. And these are due next Wednesday. All right, so that's the homework. There'll be a final project, which is worth 40% of your grade, and this should be a roughly 10-page paper. The general idea for the topic is given kind of at the bottom, but basically I want you to do something that allows you to learn how computers and computation has played a role in the development of some area of pure research mathematics. So some ideas for how that... these are just ideas. There are many, many other possibilities. But, for example, you could do a paper talking a little bit about how computers were playing a role in the classification of finite simple roots. Or you could talk about how computers played a role in the development of, say, Fermat's Last Theorem over the years. For example, you know, people did computations where they verified it up to a bazillion. They did calculations a long time ago by hand where they verified that unique factorization doesn't hold, so that a certain purported proof wasn't right. Et cetera, et cetera. Also, the Bertrand-Sorrentin-Dyer conjecture, that's a problem in number theory. It was formed based on the results of calculations that were made by Bertrand-Sorrentin-Dyer. The Riemann hypothesis calculation has played a big role in people's perspective that the Riemann hypothesis is perhaps related to random matrix theory and certain questions in physics and other areas of interest. And you can dream up all these crazy ideas about how you might approach the Riemann hypothesis, but using computers, certain of those ideas have seemed to be much, much more reasonable than others because of the results of computation. Things like sphere packing. So lots and lots of results about packing spheres or circles or higher dimensional analogs of this have been influenced by computation. And for example, there's one thing called Kepler's conjecture, which I think Tom Hales proved it, and his proof is run a computer program, and if you run it and it gives this answer, then Kepler's conjecture that stacking oranges the way you see them in the grocery store is the best way to stack oranges. So that's an example, but there are other results also related to sphere packing that use computers. or graph coloring. There's the famous four-color theorem, for example. You could talk about how that influenced graph theory, but also there are other results probably in graph theory that are computational. And a third thing you could do for a project is to look at the archive where papers about, in each subject area, maybe four or five papers appear every day. And you could look at the last n papers for some value of n, depending on your enthusiasm. And in each paper, you would skim through the paper and try to figure out whether or not they used a computer in any way, or at least cited the use of a computer. And then you could say, okay, what did they use the computer for? Did they prove a theorem using the computer? Did it just inspire some conjecture that they make? Did it give evidence for a conjecture? How is a computer used? Which software did they use? Did they use Mathematica? Did they use Magma? Did they use Sage? Did they write their own program in C? What did they do? So that would be another possible project. And that one's fairly open because you can choose an area. It could be number theory. It could be algebraic geometry. It could be category theory. It would be good to choose an area that's actually listed as one of the, I guess, classifications on the math archive. And then you could look at the recent papers. So these are ideas for projects, all of which would, I think, give you a sense of how computation plays a role in one particular area of mathematics of interest to you. Okay? Any questions about that? And you can tell based on the project description, something you could start pretty early in the class. Okay, it's the office hours. So I'll have office hours on Mondays from 2:30 to 4:30 in my office. I also have an office in this building, so I might have some office hours there. I'm not sure. I'll tell you more later. But there's the Sage Lab, which is upstairs in room 312. Point out. And it's in this building. So given that we got moved to this building, it might be a good idea to take advantage of the fact that, in fact, there's a Sage Lab in this building. Which was a total mess, by the way. I look at people who have used the lab a lot. But I just cleaned it up, so I need to hire a sysadmin to keep my lab in better order. Okay, so references. So I've kind of retitled this class a few times, but my current working title is it's Computer Programming for Pure Mathematicians. And one reason that I'm focusing on pure mathematics is that there are many, many classes in the applied math department that are computer programming for applied mathematicians. There's whole courses, there's books, there's a lot of stuff for you applied math people. Swayne Craigs is an applied math PhD candidate. Congratulations. So, in pure math, you don't, like if you go to the bookstore or you kind of start looking around, you don't feel that there's really quite as much available that really targets computation and use of computer in the context of pure mathematics, at least in practical terms. Of course, there are lots of works now, and there's a lot of literature about algorithms in the context of pure mathematics. For example, algorithms for factoring integers, or for doing stuff in algebraic geometry, or solving problems in graph theory, some of which are very relevant for pure math. But there isn't really, in my experience, much in the way of computational material that's aimed at pure mathematics research. Usually, things are aimed more at applied mathematics, or even if it's symbolic calculus type stuff or symbolic stuff, it's still aimed in a very applied direction. So, given that this is being taught through the pure math department, I think that will be a good working title. So I don't really know of any textbooks that are on that topic, but there are many textbooks on pieces of software and algorithms that are related to this course. And I've listed a bunch of things on the website. So, for example, there's many books on Python and on C, and on there's lots of web pages about various software. So I recommend that you look at them. There's certainly articles like the articles in the homework assignment that are important in that they lay out kind of the basic ideas and foundation for certain software that people put a lot of effort into developing. Okay, so what are the goals for this course? There are three goals. One is to learn about a range of software that's relevant for pure mathematics research. So what specific programs and libraries are out there that you might find useful if you want to do pure mathematics research? Actually, I found on the blackboard in the Sage Lab a quote, which is, to figure out how computers and computation can enhance your options and ability as far as doing mathematics research goes. Okay, so the goal at the end of the day is that you want to do mathematics, but you want to be better at it. And there are these things called computers that are fast, accurate, stupid. And you want to be able to use those so that your mathematics is better. That's the goal. So goal one is just to learn about what software out there in the world is really most relevant to doing research mathematics. So we're interested in this, but in the context of research mathematics, especially pure research mathematics, which for the most part to me means proving theorems about number theory, algebraic topology, algebraic geometry, etc., these areas of mathematics. Basically what you want to do to get a thesis. Right? Everybody here wants to prove some theorem or theorems. So that's the motivation. Okay, so one, learn about some software. And then two, learn about some of the basic ideas behind some of the key algorithms that are that underlie this software. So I'm going to list some of these key algorithms right here. This isn't all of them, of course, but I mean, if you play around with seriously with math software for a couple of years, you guys seem to have done. You hear about these algorithms sort of come up repeatedly and get pushed really, really hard in the context of everything else. So one is this idea of basically Strawson for multiplying matrices more quickly than time O of n cubed. So Strawson multiplication of matrices, very important in pure mathematics and also in mathematics that involves exact numbers like integers, rationals, numbers in finite fields. It's not so important in numerical applications. It's super important in non-numerical applications. So Dixon's chaotic lifting algorithm, which is, again, a linear algebra algorithm. This is for basically for solving AX equal to B. The triple L lattice basis reduction algorithm. So this is due to Lenstra-Lobach. It allows you to find a reasonably good basis for a lattice. Buchberger's algorithm for computing Grubner bases for ideals. And there's also something called F4 and F5, which is faster in some cases. Grubner bases are basically, if you want to do anything, I think it would be better if the windows closed with the door open. I don't know. We could just try it out. If it gets too stuffy, we can shut them. Just because it's basically going to be a non-construction zone for the entire time you're here at UW. Because I think the reconstruction on the hub is going to take a while. Okay, so Buchberger's algorithm for computing Grubner bases. Grubner bases, they're kind of just as important if you're doing commutative algebra, so anything with multivariate polynomial rings, or even anything that kind of can be represented in terms of that, then basically these end up sort of appearing right in the middle of what you're doing in some important way, just like echelon forms and various decompositions of matrices that constantly appear when you do linear algebra, where matrix multiplication constantly appears. So this is really central in commutative algebra. For example, and then there's something called Karatsuba, which is kind of an example of a technique, a divide and conquer technique for doing fast multiplication, not of matrices, but of polynomials. So fast polynomial multiplication. And there are many algorithms for polynomial factorization. Univariate and multivariate. So for example, Brillouin-Kamp's algorithm,
just as we're talking, univariate polynomials over finite fields. And then there's also an algorithm for factoring univariate polynomials over the integers in polynomial time, and that uses the triple L algorithm. So there's a lot of theory about factoring univariate polynomials, and there's also theory about factoring multivariate polynomials, which is very different, actually. And there are other linear algebra algorithms, like the Wiedemann algorithm, really important for solving AX equal to B, but where A is sparse. So it's thought to be pretty important. Here A is dense over, so we don't say the rational numbers. Here A is sparse. There's another, there are algorithms for doing, for example, Hermite normal form. This is when you want to basically do everything like you do in a linear algebra context, but over the integers instead of over the rational numbers. And then you suddenly end up trying to do, well, matrix multiplications are different, but putting things in special forms, the algorithms are really different. And like up here, you just reduce, if you're over the rational numbers, you can put matrices in reduced rational form, for example, by just reducing modulo various primes, putting them in echelon form there, and then lifting the result using a Chinese remainder theorem type thing. You can't do that over the integers because you somehow lose too much information unless you're really, really clever. So these are just a range of different algorithms that come up in various contexts. And I'm kind of curious, I want to take a little poll, and if an algorithm up there seems like something of great interest to you, raise your hand as I point at it. And then I'm just going to count up how many votes are got. And that will potentially influence what we spend more time thinking about. Okay? And by the way, what I plan to do with either these or possibly another algorithm that you suggest is to talk both about the idea and theory behind the algorithm, you know, describe what the algorithm is and some of the ideas about making it fast, but then also talk about actual implementations and what the deals are. So how is it implemented in Sage? How is it implemented in some other system? How good is it in practice? You have something like Dixon's Kiaglyphine. In practice, how big can the matrix be? These are the sort of numbers you want to have in your mind after the class is over. So does it work fine if your matrix has a million rows and columns? Probably not, but maybe this one does. So that's the sort of thing you would take away from this. Okay, so let's start with Strawson matrix multiplication. So if it's really interesting, you raise your hand. I'll try to quickly count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, Dixon's Kiaglyphine lifting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Triple L. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Root sugar. Multivariate polynomials. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Karatsuba, fast polynomial multiplication. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Or 9. Polynomial factorization. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 15, at least. Are you more interested in univariate or multivariate?
Multivariate.
Okay. Both. Okay, so definitely multi is even more. Wiedemann's algorithm, so sparse solving in a context of a super finite field. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, Hermite normal form. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
I have a question.
Yes.
When you say solve AX equal B, do you mean exact or?
Yes. Always exact. Everything is fine. Be exact. I'm going to attempt to take a picture of that. So that's the second thing, to learn something about some of these. And the polynomial factorization, Karatsuba, triple L, Hermite form, these are like the top four. So the most likely to get covered. All right, and the third thing is the project, which we already discussed. Okay, and the homework. So now, I'm going to give you an overview of
now software from the context of, or from the perspective of wanting software useful for pure mathematics research. And basically, first I'll talk about the very general purpose systems that are not dead or irrelevant, and then I'll talk about some about special purpose libraries and what's motivated those. This is from the perspective of pure math research. And hence, I will not include MATLAB. Though MATLAB does have some relevance, but it's kind of... So MATLAB, as a company, like a year ago, they bought MuPAD, which was some German system, and so they own MuPAD, and hence, since MuPAD is pretty... It's sort of relevant... MATLAB is in that you could buy the symbolic toolbox. But in order to get MATLAB plus a symbolic toolbox, you have to spend a lot of money. And you're not really getting something that's very fast. And I don't really, nowadays I don't know anyone who really uses MuPAD anymore. So it's not, at least for research stuff. There was a common Torx group, but I'm going to exclude MATLAB. But the main systems that I know about that are relevant, still developed, are Sage, Maple, Mathematica, and Magma, where they have significant applications in pure math. So first I'll address a quick overview of political systems, and then I'll say some things about the technical strengths and weaknesses of these systems. So Sage is free, open source, and let's see. Okay, so it's free, open source. Its development is mostly academic, meaning it's written mostly by postdocs, grad students, you know, people in an academic context, not people that work full time at a company. And its funding is mostly government, via grants or contracts with government entities. But there's some, with Sage, there's some donations as well. Donations from individuals and companies. So people and companies. These are actually fairly common. So that's how Sage kind of sits, I guess, politically and organizationally. Free, open source, academic, mostly government, but certainly a substantial amount of other donations. Maple is not free, expensive, closed, developed by a company, and their funding comes from customers. And one thing, the company is actually owned by some Japanese software reseller. It used to be an independent company in Canada that was, I think, originally founded by Michael Monaghan and somebody else. He told me that they originally founded it because it was too much trouble to copy onto tapes the Maple software and send it around to people. And so they decided to make a little teeny company that would just automate the process of copying and mailing out copies of Maple to academics, and they gave really steep discounts to academia, and it got popular in academia. They did this before Mathematica, a little bit before Mathematica came along. So that was their original motivation, and I think I don't know if it was because of the financial crisis, but during the financial, like the kind of worst part of the financial crisis, the company got bought by some Japanese reseller. So now it's owned by a Japanese company. I was told that the reason that they got bought partly was that they tried to cut out the Japanese reseller from their own market by just trying to sell directly to customers there in Asia rather than going through the reseller. So the reseller just bought them, just bought the whole company. I don't know whether or not this is true. It obviously doesn't say that in the press release from Maple and from the company. but that's what I was told kind of by somebody, so by a birdie. And though it's developed, actually I didn't say so, it's developed by a company, but they do have some good ties to academia. For example, Michael Monaghan, one of the original founders of the company, is a professor at Simon Fraser University. And so he's an academic, a professor, but he works a lot on Maple and contributes substantial code regularly to Maple. And he has students that work on Maple. So he certainly keeps those ties strong. I was asking him once about, who in, say, Vancouver has the source code of Maple? He's like, pretty much me. So it's not like a lot of people have the source code of Maple. So it's pretty tightly controlled. Mathematica has some similar properties. It's also expensive and closed. It's a private company, and it's in Urbana-Champaign in Chicago, or in Illinois. It's a nondescript office building in Urbana-Champaign. And it's also paid for by customers and developed by people at the company. And I get the impression that there are more ties between Maple and academia than Mathematica, but that could depend on one's area and location. So Mathematica originally was started by Stephen Wolfram, but I guess he was at the Institute for Advanced Study and then later at Urbana-Champaign, and he and Dan Grayson and a few other people wrote the very, very kind of first early version of what would become Mathematica. And I think Stephen Wolfram just kind of quit the university, started this company, took the program and started selling it, and then the other people at the university sued him and got some chunk of ownership or money as a result. So they did win, in some sense, whatever winning means when it comes to lawsuits. But it was founded well over 20 years ago. Well, this was late 1980s, and this was similar, maybe early 1990s. But it seemed like Wolfram's personality didn't fit very well with academia, so he decided to work in the context of a company. One unique thing about Mathematica as compared to Maple is that Wolfram has this thing called Wolfram Alpha, which is kind of like, Stephen Wolfram's version of Google or something, in that it provides... probably everyone here has tried it, but it's a potential additional funding source for the Mathematica software in addition to just customers. Since, for example, Wolfram Alpha gets, embedded in Bing, which is Microsoft's search engine. So, you can pay money to embed the results of Wolfram Alpha and other software. It's very much not a totally free thing, though. Of course, normal people can just use it, although there are funny constraints about how you can use it. Okay, so these are both systems that are very relevant for for pure math research. And then there's Magma, which is, it's not as expensive as Maple or Math. Well, it depends how you look at it. It's either more expensive or less expensive, depending on who you are. So when I say expensive, a typical Maple or Mathematica license to a company is about $2,000. But to an undergrad, it's like $100. To an academic like me, it's about maybe $500. So the price depends a lot on who you are to what it is. So for example, with Maple, I once called him up and said, I'm going to write a book and I want to write a chapter on Maple. Could you guys send me a copy? And at the time, I was at a university that didn't have a site license for Maple, namely Harvard. And they said, well, it'll cost you $500. And I said, okay, that's too much. Can you just do better? And he said, I'll call you back the next day and see if I can do better. And so the next day we talked, and he said, I can get you a license for $250, but you have to get four of your other colleagues to buy a license. So he basically doubled the price on me. But he halved it for me, and it meant that I had to buy twice, or a whole bunch, $1,000 worth. So the price was somewhere between $250 and $500. With Magma, I think for students, it's $100. I think they cripple it pretty badly, so it's not really usable for students, at least. It's often been like that. But I'll say less expensive, because I think for you know, kind of well, their academic
price is, or their official list price is something like $12.50.
So it's more than the academic prices of these systems, like twice as much, but it's less than their kind of list price. On the other hand, on their website, it's unclear that they don't actually seem to publish a price for non-academic users, and I don't think they have very many of them. They also have a third world discount that's like $500, something like that. So if you're in the third world, you can get it a little bit cheaper. And these are all copy protected pretty heavily. Like Mathematica, when you install it, you get some code, but the code expires after 1 year usually. So you'll start getting all these warnings and stuff. So you have to renew your license. So I guess I don't know what that's called when software always explodes after 1 year. It's kind of almost subscription. Yeah. With Magman, no matter what, when you buy it, you get it for as long as you want to use it. What they do is they give you a license code that's tied to typically to the MAC address of your network card. So as long as you're using it in a computer that has that network card, then you can continue using it. So at least it's indefinite. So it's closed in the same way that these are. And it's developed in an academic context. That's a big difference. Academic. And it's funded by customers and by government grants. Unlike Mathematica and Maple, which aren't directly funded at all by grants. But Magma does, in fact, get a lot of grants, or a lot of funding from grants, and also from government. Okay, so that's kind of the political picture, the spectrum of the big general purpose systems. And these are all very big. Like, every single one's at least a million lines of code, possibly a lot more. Yes?
Where is Magma based?
Sydney, Australia. Okay. So this is developed at the University of Sydney.
Sydney, right in the math department in Australia. And the person that leads this project is John Cannon, who is an academic. He is originally a computational group theorist, and he's been,
in some sense, this project started in 1973, but under different names. And in the mid-90s, it became Magma. Before that, it was Cayley and maybe something else before that. But it's something, you know, it's been kind of a lifelong thing that he's done, and he's got the grants and organized the people and so on. And there's also, you know, many other people. I actually visited them 3 times and have worked for them at various points, and I have maybe 20 or 30,000 lines of code that's included in Magma. So I know this program pretty well. I have not personally visited either of these places. Maybe I'll, since I have a name for everything, I'll call him Monaghan. I think he's one of the co-founders. I don't know if I'm spelling that right. And this is me. Okay, so there's a person for everything. Okay, so this is a kind of political situation for each of the systems. And you can see they all have, they're all a little different than the others. Yes, Chris?
I just want to say that if you're interested to hear about what it's like to be an academic,
that's an excellent example to show how this has, in some ways, stronger ties, it seems, than with Mathematica. Stronger ties between academia. And there's kind of a spectrum here. Like, here there are a number of people that work full-time on Magma, but I know there must, at least half of them are number theorists that I know. They do research in number theory also, like Mark Watkins, for example. So they're really people with PhDs that have been postdocs and then decided to do a postdoc with the Magma group because they love programming, and like the academic environment. I mean, for example, with Magma, you can go down there, do whatever you want, write papers on your work, and that's fine. With Mathematica, Stephen Wolfram actually sued pretty seriously, had very bad consequences for the life of some guy who proved some result about finite state automata while working for him at Mathematica and tried to publish it. So it's a very different environment in that it's really a company which is totally normal for a company, that what you do for the company is owned by the company, not you. But it's an uncomfortable environment if you're used to an academic environment. So with Magma, it's definitely much more an academic environment, but with Mathematica, you don't get that sense at all. But yeah, this guy Joe Buehler was the deputy director of MSRI, and he told me a story about the employee from Mathematica who came to try to get a talk about his work, and how they were trying to juggle the lawyers to keep the lawyers out of the lecture hall at the same time because it was so weird. But that was, if you can read about it, switch around. I don't know about Maple, but I know that Maple's very careful to get people who write code for them to sign away the rights and copyright and so on to that code. But that usually happens. And then once that happens, that code, even if it's interpreted code that you could just read and that's not compiled, you're not allowed to look at it and then implement something yourself. One of the grad students here was very excited about some new package for doing something with partial differential equations, and he wanted to take it, read the Maple code, and then implement it in Sage, but we asked the Maple company whether that would be allowed, and they said, absolutely not, no way it can. That would be a derived work of our code. Okay, so this is from a kind of political perspective, or organizational. Check by asking people or searching around. Here it's going to be more opinionated. And also, so the thing is, the technical aspects of these systems for, say, algebraic number theory, I know really well. I have a reasonable sense of them for some of their areas. There are some areas, like algebraic curves, for Bernard de Koenig's work, where I don't have a good sense of, how good these systems are relative to each other. And there's also the fact that they change. I mean, in any given month or two, somebody could sit down and just write a bunch of code and make one system better than another at a certain task. So each system, has well over a million lines of code. They're very, very complicated programs that do many, many, many different things. And so to say one is better than another overall or at a particular type of computation or even, you have to go very, very, even if you choose one single function that takes its input a number, an integer, an output's an integer, like counting the number of primes up to x. Even for one single function, there can be subtle variety between the different systems. Maybe one is faster, but uses massively more memory. Maybe one's way faster for small values of x, but slower for big values, and conversely. Maybe you care only about small values, so you want the one that's... So even in the simplest case, it can be hard to say which one's better than another one. But sometimes it's really clear that one system is massively more developed than another system. And that I'm going to kind of just give some kind of vague sense in a technical way relevant to the question of pure math research about which system is more well developed in various ways and which isn't. So starting with Sage, here's what it's good at. Big general sense, and here's what it's bad at. And I'll say something similar about the other systems. One other thing to keep in mind is that if you know Mathematica super well, you're Sam Wagstaff, for example, then Mathematica might be better than anything else just because it will take you, a few weeks to learn one of the other systems. So even if the other system is substantially better, at some calculation where somebody knows how to use it well, Mathematica might be better for you just because of your knowledge. So how good something is a combination of your own, you and the piece of software. So keep that in mind as well. That said, there are some very, very clear, very easy to agree with statements. For example, just to throw it out, it's really easy to agree with. Magma is very bad at symbolic integration. It has no functions for symbolic integration. I just want to put something up here that Sage is also
reasonably got it. But symbolic integration is solving a differential equation, and solving differential equations is not going to be the focus of this class at all. It's very important, but I think there are lots of stuff already about that, and I kind of think of that as more applied. So, okay, so Sage, I think, is pretty good at number theory. Combinatorics. Graph theory. Linear algebra, by which I mean over finite fields, over the rational numbers, over the integers, that sort of thing. Group theory. Commutative algebra. Has a lot of powerful topology stuff that John, mostly implemented by John Palmieri. Sage is actually pretty good at drawing pictures, and you can be able to do. Just add magma. Magma is really bad at drawing pictures. They don't care in the least bit about that. Okay, so some things that Sage is fairly bad at is anything related to symbolic integration and differential equations and things. Tends to be behind the curve for some reason. Let's see, I think it's fairly bad at multivariate polynomial factorization. Polyfactoring. It's kind of a funny topic. So, I mean, one of the basic problems here is you have, say, a polynomial with rational coefficients in n variables, and you want to write it as a product of irreducibles. So, strangely, until this summer, I think there was no open source program that could do that very quickly as compared to the closed source programs such as Maple and Magma. Kind of a weird thing, but that was the case. So Singular sort of claimed to be able to do it, but it was really, you know, one time you try a problem and it would be 0.1 seconds, then you try exactly the same problem, it would take 5 seconds, and then the next time it would take 90 seconds. I mean, it was just ridiculous, and it would be wrong sometimes, and it was just really, really bad. So that wasn't so good. This guy, in the open source world, this is not a part of Sage, but there's a program called JIAC, which is a C++ library and an interactive interface. And this guy, Bernard Parnis, I think, from somewhere in France, he spent the summer implementing very fast multivariate polynomial factorization, and it's fast. I mean, it's really, really fast. It beats Magma in many cases. It's extremely impressive. It's open source, GPL licensed. You can just get it. So it exists now, but surprising how long that took. So it exists in open source, but it's not good in Sage. So Lisp is bad, but it's right that there's hope. For the most part, Sage equals most of the open source software that's freely available. Let's see, some other things. So special functions. We had a workshop in Austria this summer on special functions, Sage Days, and it was abundantly clear the extent to which, say, Maple and Mathematica are ahead of all the open source software for working with special functions. And a lot of this is, I think, partly because the main audience of Maple and Mathematica is they have the people that are teaching calculus, but then they also have people that want to apply computer algebra in an industrial context. And these people care a lot about Abramovich and Stegan, that book on special functions. That, for them, that's math. And that has to be implemented as much as possible in your system. So in Maple and Mathematica, they do an amazing job of, in some sense, implementing that book. Me, on the other hand, typical pure mathematician, I had never heard of Abramovich and Stegan until fairly recently, when a chemist at UW, Bill Reinhardt, came up to me and said, "We need to, do something related to Abramovich and Stegan and Sage." And I'm like, "What's that? Why?" And it's just, it's super, it really is super important in like basically everything except pure math that uses math. It's kind of like all the functions of calculus and then much, much, much more, and all the relations between them, and you know, what all these hypergeometric functions and how they're related. And there are certainly parts of math. For example, I just had a student, Robert Boucha, do a thesis, and in fact involved hypergeometric functions a bunch. He was computing special values of L functions. It turned out that if he was looking at kind of the first case of a hypergeometric function that numerical people never look at or care much about. And so so he didn't really get anything out of the literature. But special functions is something that Sage is unfortunately fairly bad at in comparison at least to the other systems. Sage has some capabilities there, but really not very good. Basically, you get the picture. It's all symbolic stuff that is very relevant to industry, applied math, that sort of thing. All of it feels severely behind in Sage as compared to Maple and Mathematica, because these guys have been so motivated by serving that audience. If it wasn't for these systems, Sage might feel quite good at that, at special functions. But because of these systems, it really does not feel like it is very good at these things. So basically, symbolic math that really useful outside of math. And this stuff is really good in both Maple and Mathematica. Symbolic, maybe I'll just call it applied symbolic math. A. Abramovich and C. By the way, there's very recently, I don't know how to spell this, but very recently there's a new purely electronic web version of Abramovich and Stegan that the NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Times, put probably the last, I think they've been working on it for like 11 years or so, but it's now available for the most part. Not every single chapter of it is, but quite a lot of it is available. So both of these systems are very good at that sort of thing. So, you know, if you're doing research and you start hitting a bunch of stuff that involves special functions. So special, by the way, the definition of a special function is basically any function on the real or complex numbers that somebody was so interested in that they named it. I mean, that's really all it is. Functions with names. So even the functions you see in calculus, like sine and cosine, are very special cases of special functions. There are many, many, many more. So these systems are both very good at that. Mathematica is really good at visualization nowadays, especially interactive visualization. Here from this interactive visualization. These are both very good at applied symbolic stuff. They're very good at interactive visualization as opposed to Magma. They're pretty bad, actually. They're horrible. Maple sucks at number theory. It's amazing how bad it is. Really, really terrible. And exact linear algebra is surprisingly bad. It's kind of funny, actually, that exact linear algebra is so bad in Maple that Maple funded a lot of work on exact linear algebra by people at Waterloo and so on, which ended up going into Sage, which made Sage really good at exact linear algebra. Because the people ended up open sourcing that code since they're in academia. So that has made it good. Basically, most of this stuff they're not very good at, with exceptions. And Magma is extremely good at most of this stuff, except for the drawing pictures part. And in some cases, especially in number theory, Magma is better than Sage, and way, way scary better than Maple and Mathematica.
So that is a technical overview of these four different big picture systems. So there are some really important things that Maple and Mathematica are much, much better than Sage or Magma at. But conversely, in research mathematics, especially involving these topics, the situation's very much reversed. Because the clients are, in a sense, reversed. Okay, I'm going to pick up next time by talking about special purpose libraries. such as NTL and Perry and Singular and so on, that have been developed because of frustration with various aspects of Enabling Mathematica by research mathematicians who care about doing research mathematics much more than chemistry or something in more applied areas. Okay.